Okay, so we have a reading with many different things, not as long as the previous ones. In the fourth reading of Parshas Mishpatim, where chapter 23 opens, we hear about truth and justice. The Torah tells us about the rules that govern the Jewish judiciary. And in the second verse of the 23rd chapter of Exodus, we come across the notion of majority rules. And this will be the focus of today's class. The pasuk: You shall not follow the majority to bring about that which is not good. V'loisane al riv lintos acharei rabim lahatos. What is going on over here? Torah begins by telling us not to follow the majority, and the pasuk concludes by telling us we should follow the majority. So we have a long Rashi that will explain this pasuk. Pasuk Beis Rashi says, "Loisihiye acharei rabim lerois." You should not follow the majority when it comes to doing bad. Yesh b'mikra zeh. Midrashei Chachmei Yisrael. This verse has many midrashim that accompany it. Aval ein loshen amikra miyushuv behem al ofnov. However, the various midrashic teachings that are associated with this verse do not settle the verse in its syntax. The verse doesn't flow. It's a very choppy pasuk. So Rashi tells us, Mikan, it is from here, Dorshu, that our rabbis expounded, She'ein matin l'chayva v'hachroz dayin echad. That when it comes to a question of a criminal case, when it comes to convicting somebody, so the majority, a slender majority of a single judge, is not sufficient for a conviction. So we speak here about the ecclesiastical criminal court, which has not sat for nearly 2,000 years. Now, a criminal court for Jewish people, a Torah court, has to be comprised of a minimum of 23 judges. Of course, the Sanhedrin, the high ecclesiastical court, has 71 judges. But a minimal criminal court has to have at least 23 judges. How is the number derived? That's a good question. And we're not learning about that right now, but we'll get to that. We talk about a minyan, the yitzilu eda, the shoftu eda, the yitzilu eda, that there's an eda, a congregation, or a minyan, that saves, and there's a minyan that convicts. So that gives you 20. Okay. And then you need to have a majority.
Interesting.
But at any rate, you compare this to the secular courts, for example, in Canada, where I think the high court of the land, the Supreme Court has 9 justices, I'm pretty sure, yep. Right? And the average criminal court has 1 justice. With maybe there's a jury in Canada? Or is that all you, there is, yes. Right? So the jury is comprised of people who were too thick to watch the news. From people who don't have an opinion before. Right? Who sat in OJ's case? The few people who didn't actually know what happened. So you're not talking about the sharpest blades in the drawer necessarily. And you're not necessarily talking about people who have any kind of background insofar as administering justice is concerned or criminology is concerned. For a Torah court, you need to have 23 brilliant people who have extensive background in academia as well as the notion of criminology and law. And these 23 people have to deliberate. We don't have this idea of taking the peers or ordinary people who have no background, but taking people who have extraordinary background, who cannot have any vested interests whatsoever. And these are the people who will debate what will happen to somebody who allegedly committed a crime. And how do you decide? So the answer is majority rules. But the Torah tells us that we need a supermajority. And a supermajority we're going to see is Mikan Darshu, from here we expounded, She'imatin l'chayva ba'achroz dayin echot. That you cannot go in a direction of conviction with a slender majority of a single judge. So if you, for example, would have 10 judges who said he should be exonerated, and 11 judges who would say he should be convicted, that wouldn't work. We need to have a majority, a super majority, with at least two, rather than a slender majority with only one more judge. So that's the beginning of the pasuk that says, "Le'sihira achre rabim," do not follow the majority. For what do we not follow the majority? Lirois, for a conviction, for bad. But that is a slender majority. The soifa mikra darshu, the end of the pasuk, which seems to be a contradiction, comes along and says, "Achre rabim lahatos." If you don't know what to do, you follow the majority. So this means to say, she'im yesh shnayim b'mechayv in yoser ala mezaken, that if you have two more judges who follow the side of conviction, who err on the side of what's not good, and not a non-good outcome, so to speak, for the defendant in the court, so then you can turn the judgment in a way which convicts for the person who's accused of the alleged crime. Now, the pasuk says, don't follow a majority. So Rashi explains that means a slender majority. Do follow a majority. That means a super majority. A super majority here is talking about not one, but two judges. That's such a super majority.
Why would the Torah be so vague and something so important as, you know, legal proceedings in a court?
It's not so vague. It has to be expounded. But the truth is that there's many messages being conveyed here. It's not only about a court. There's many messages. And there are multiple systems or possibilities within a court system. Because there's a court system that sits for what we call a criminal justice.
Right.
A criminal justice could have a capital offense or a capital punishment. And then there's what we call a monetary court. It deals with conviction, but it's not going to result somebody being executed, it's going to result in somebody being obligated to pay. All of this discussion revolves around what we call the criminal court when lives are at stake. However, when it comes to money that's at stake, which the Torah also takes very seriously, over there we do not require a supermajority. Even a slender majority could be sufficient. So party A says, you owe me money. Party B says, I don't owe you any money. And the courts have to decide. The court will decide by virtue of a single voice. Now, what about the middle of the pasuk? Leisan ariv. What does this mean? So Rashi says, leisan ariv means, emtza mikra darshu, leisan ariv is as if it would say, al rav. Now the rav is in usual typical syntax refers to the spiritual leader of a congregation or a community, or the person who's responsible, who's the senior rabbinic figure, the senior scholarly figure. And in the court setting, it would mean she'ein chelkin al mufla shebebezdin, that you shall not argue on the words of the senior justice. So if the senior justice says something, don't argue against him. There has to be a certain etiquette or a certain respect that's followed. But if that's the case, then nobody will ever be able to say their opinion, because the senior justice will express his opinion and nobody could argue with him. So how will you ever get a majority or a minority? How will you ever decide anything? And the answer is that we have to make sure to hear the opinion of the minor justices before we hear the senior justice, because once the senior justice speaks, you can't argue with him anymore. So from here we know, lefikach, maschilim b'dini nefashis min hatzad. When it comes to a criminal court, when it comes to lives at stake, we're going to first hear the opinion of those who sit on the side. What does it mean on the side? So the courts used to sit in a half circle. The senior justice would sit in the middle, and then it would move in a half circle, and the minor justices, those who had just joined the criminal court, would be on the fringes, on the sides. So the ones on the side would begin to speak first. They would hear the proceedings, the case would be presented, and then the court would deliberate, they would think about it carefully, and then they would start to offer opinions. So the opinions would be, and you don't ask the senior justice, what do you say? But instead, we hear the opinion of the minor justices. We listen l'ktanim shebohem. We listen to the minor opinions, the youngest members of the judiciary. Shoyalin tchila shoyemru daitim. We say, okay, what's your opinion? Where do you think this is going? How would you rule in this case? And in that way, their opinions are unadulterated or not influenced by the opinion of the senior justice. And it would be inappropriate for them to argue. So here's a junior member of the court. He only joined the court yesterday. He was just promoted to the court. And here you have a senior justice who's sitting in his position maybe for decades, and he has an opinion. So does the junior member even you know, open his mouth? He's not going to say anything. If he's not going to say anything, we have a miscarriage of justice. Because now it's one person who's deciding the fate rather than an entire judicial proceeding. So the Torah says the judicial proceeding has to work where the minor are first voicing an opinion and only later the major opinions. So it comes out, ulefi dibri raveseinu, according to the words of our rabbis then, kach pisrein, this is the way we should interpret, or here's how we should explain the pasuk. The pasuk opens and says, leisihi achare rabim lerois. Do not decide the verdict by virtue of the majority. What does that mean? That's how the courts work. That means l'chayiv misa, to be able to convict somebody, which would result possibly in a capital offense in the execution of the accused, the alleged criminal. Do not do so b'shvil dayan echad. A person cannot be decided by virtue of one person, even if he's a very lofty person, a very wise person, a very learned person, a very experienced person, but it's still one person. One person cannot decide the fate of another's life. Until sheyirbu hamachayiv in alam hazaken, that you have a significant number of members of the court who are actually deciding to follow in the direction of a conviction. Leisan al rav. Do not follow or do not argue on the opinion of the senior justice, lintis bidvarav, to turn away from his words. The senior justice speaks, we have to take him seriously. He is the senior justice after all. And seniority gets respect. But lafi shehu chaser yud, because it's missing a yud, it's read riv in the Torah. When we read it in the Shabbos, you'll hear it, leisan al riv. But Riv should be spelled Reish Yud Vez. It's not spelled with the Yud. It's spelled Reish Vez. So therefore, it's read Riv, but it also can be read as Rav. Darshu Bekein, that's how they learned this. Then the Pasuk says, Achare Rabim Lahatais, always follow the majority. The Yesh Rabim, in other words, why did we start off by saying, don't follow the majority? And then we say, follow the majority, which sounds like a contradiction within the same verse. Says Rashi, this is to tell us, the yesh rabim, there is a majority, sha'ata neita achareim, that you do follow, even when it comes to a conviction. The emosai, when would that be? Bizman shem shnayim, when you have two. So if you have two voices, two justices who render a judgment and say conviction, so then you would follow the majority. So when it says don't follow the majority, which majority is it talking about? The slender majority. When it says yes, follow the majority, it's talking about the supermajority. One justice cannot bring a conviction. Two justices can bring a conviction. The notion that a jury or people who have no background in law should be deciding the fate of somebody based on what they consider to be reasonable doubt is totally unacceptable from a Torah perspective. Reasonable doubt. You could decide the fate of a person, put him in an electric chair because of reasonable doubt, or whether there isn't reasonable doubt. How could you make a decision like that? It was just somebody now who was released from prison. He was convicted of a rape he never did. They had actual DNA evidence that showed he was never the right person. So who knows who the jury was and what kind of biases they came to the court with? And what background do they have? To be able to look into something more deeply and to come with a majority, it could be one person who's an absolute fool who made the decision, and then we have a person's life is ruined. or a person's life is even taken. So in a Torah court, that does not fly. And even though you'll say to me, how could you ever be 100% absolutely sure? We believe that if you follow the Torah proceedings, whatever happened, that's what Hashem wanted. But the people take this very, very seriously. And you should know, as a matter of fact, that when we're dealing with a conviction, that the justices do not eat that day. They have to fast that day. And they take it very, very seriously. And it doesn't take months and months to make a decision. They have to deliberate, and there has to be a decision that day. If they cannot reach a decision, so then we have a situation where the court will have to reconvene the next day. But these are very, very limited. This doesn't drag on for a long amount of time. The evidence presented, the justices will deliberate, they will come to a decision. So yes, Rabim, there is a time when you do follow them. The emosai, when is that? Is manchem shnayim, when you have two hamachriyim having yesim and emzakin. So now we know there's a difference between the different forms of majority. When does majority rule? Well, that's the question. All right. Now Rashi continues. Umimash mashanem leisia achri rabim lirois, because it says the intimation of. Do not follow majority to bring about a conviction. Shemeyani from this I hear. Aval hayei moyim l'teivo. When do you not follow majority? L'rois. For what's bad, for a conviction. However, l'teivo, for an exoneration, you have a voice. So you need a supermajority to convict. You do not need a supermajority to release, to exonerate. From here we say, Bedin and Nefashis, when it comes to lives at stake, Echad Lizkais, we're able to come out with a meritorious judgment by virtue of a slender majority, even one voice, and only Valpi Shnayim L'chayva, only by virtue of two when it comes to conviction. Now you're going to say to me, if you let the guy set the person free, so who says that's a good thing? Well, the thing is this. Already is dead, unfortunately. So the court is not deciding on a life. So when we choose to exonerate somebody, it's not a situation where the slender majority is actually going to have somebody convicted or somebody's life taken. The life was lost was already lost. The question is not, should we take another life? And of course, there are those who would argue, we should never take another life. And the Torah says, we should. If there's a conviction, we're obligated to. And that is not compassion altogether. It's the opposite of compassion. But it's a very serious thing. And it can't be taken lightly, and it has to be something done with the enormous amount of seriousness and commitment to be able to follow and pursue justice as the Torah wants us to. Now, Unculus, as you'll see, and you ask why does the Torah speak clearly, Unculus renders this pasuk entirely different. He says, "Loi simna mileilpa mad be'ena chaldina," which means, "Do not restrain yourself from expressing your opinion." And he says, "Lefiha ivri, lashano ivri lefiha targum kachon nidrash." So then, if you have to go back to the Hebrew based on the targum, based on the Aramaic rendering of this pasuk, this is what it would have to say: "Vleisan ariv lintois." What does it mean? You shall not express. Or you shall not restrain your opinion. If you will be asked to render a decision about something, then don't remove yourself from offering an opinion. That's leisana here means don't restrain yourself from getting involved in a contentious issue or saying, well, I don't want to give my opinion. Why do I need to get involved with this? If I get involved with this, you know, then I become responsible. I'd rather sit this one out. But that actually would not be the right thing to do, because situation, justice has to be rendered. You have an opinion. You're obligated to say something. So a judge can recuse himself when he doesn't know where this case is going. He could say, I feel I'm an engaged party, I feel involved, I recuse myself. If he doesn't know what the actual outcome is, then he could recuse himself. Once you know what the outcome is, you have no right not to give your opinion. So let's say the judge is going to sit because he wants to, it's his friend, or he knows this person, or he believes in the rectitude, the justice of this case, and then he hears all the details, and he says, no, one second. I can't set this guy free. I only sat it because I wanted to exonerate. Now I don't feel myself able to exonerate. You know what? I'll just recuse myself. I'm not going to offer an opinion because I don't want to be the one who convicts. I'm the kind of judge who likes to exonerate. So we're not allowed to do that. That's how Unkelus interprets this. And then Rashi goes on to explain how and why he doesn't say this. He says, "Vani Eimer," and I say, "Yashvay al ofnav kipshutei," that in order to be able to set in the syntax, that this is the way you should say the verse. Kach b'seinei, lesiya acher abim lirois. If you see that there are people who are not approaching this entire proceedings with integrity, don't say, they're a majority, I'm just a minority. I know they're doing the wrong thing, but you know what? I'll follow what everybody else does. It's good enough for me. If it's good enough for the crowd, it's good enough for me too. Rashi says, no, don't do that. I can say, I'll follow what they say, but I don't really agree with it. If you think it's wrong, do not follow the majority. In other words, Rashi is telling us another detail here. When it says don't follow the majority, it means if you're sitting in a judicial body and most of the justices are expressing a particular opinion and you think that their judgment is flawed, and you think to yourself, I don't want to be the odd one out. I don't even want expressing my opinion. How's it going to look? You're not allowed to do that. And it's uncomfortable when you're sitting in a committee of people and an idea is being expressed and you think, you feel strongly this is the right thing to do. You don't want to be the odd one out. Why should you be the only dissenting voice? So Rashi has to do that. You have a job, you have a responsibility, then you must voice your opinion and you have to say what you believe is right, not what everybody else is saying or what's popular. You know, sometimes I sit on the COR's rabbinic board, and we have to make very serious decisions sometimes. It involves people's livelihood, who will get a kosher supervision, who won't get. They're serious decisions. And it's not easy when you're sitting around the table and there's people that may be wiser than you or older than you, and everybody feels a certain way, and you have a different opinion. It's, you know, you just want to go along, especially like if you have three deliberations in a row, and each opinion doesn't feel good. Okay, what am I? Am I always the troublemaker? I'm always the one who has a different opinion. Why can't I follow everybody else? But you're not allowed to. You have to give the opinion whatever you believe to be true. And if you'll be the sole dissenting voice, so be it. You can't follow the majority because that's what everybody else says. So there's actually multiple messages being conveyed here. When we say don't follow majority, there's a super majority versus slender majority when it comes to a criminal case, and it says don't follow the majority. Some of them don't follow the majority sometimes could be speaking about a situation where you don't want to offer an opinion because everybody's saying otherwise. It says you have no right to do that. If everybody is saying something which you believe is wrong, you can be the sole dissenting voice. You have to say what you think is right. Don't follow the majority. So, you understand how multiple messages are conveyed here? Rashi says now, "V'leisana al riv lintes" could also mean "V'mishol chahanodin aleisah mishpat." If the person is going to ask you about your opinion, "Al tanenu al riv davar aneta achrei oisin rabim," don't say that your opinion follows everybody else. "Lahatas hamishpat v'amitoi," and when your opinion would follow everybody else, you would then turn the verdict from its truth or integrity. "Ela emeris hamishpat kasher hu." Job is to say as you believe it to be. And then if they'll follow so then in that case the opinion will follow what the majority did, but you cannot simply say, you know what, I wash my hands of this, everybody's following a certain way, I'll say too. You have to always follow the integrity of what you believe to be right. So this is why the Pasuk seems to us, speaking to us in multiple voices here, and we're running late, but I just want to quickly share with you a fascinating insight into this business of majority rules. So on page Kufman Vav, here we have a commentary from the Rebbe on this business of majority rules, which is actually sewn together from multiple sources, multiple edited sources. And the Rebbe brings here that Kosvu Achreinim, many of the latter commentaries and sages of the Jewish people, write Shekasha Bezdin Achriya Bahalocha Kolshehi, that when a Bezdin comes to a decision about whatever particular halacha will be, and it comes Alpi Das Roiv Chaverov, according to the opinion of most of that body, that judicial body, Ein Hadover Nechshav Sak Halacha Shel Haroiv Bovad, then it is not the opinion of a majority of the court, but rather Elahamiyut Mitztaref, then the minority gets subsumed into the majority. And who renders the decision? Who renders the verdict? The court. The court has spoken. So let's say in the Supreme Court in Canada, there'll be a 4-5 decision. So the dissenting opinions will tell you what they have to say, and you'll know what the dissenting opinion is, and then the majority of the court will rule one way, and if 4 justices rule one way and 5 justices rule the other way, then we'll follow the majority of 5 justices. Who ultimately the 5, but in Torah it doesn't work like that. In Torah we say the court has ruled. The deliberations are secret and private, and they do not. In the end, the court has to write up the decision, and whatever the majority will rule, that's how the court will rule. Mashmos hadavar bepashtazu, the intimation here is shalachre shahamiot neichich ladas shekayim roiv, that after the minority discovers there is a majority, she'ena mekabel hazdaita, that doesn't follow their opinion. So then, mevatelu is daitip neidas harayv. Then you have to nullify your opinion before the opinion of the majority. So as long as the deliberations are ongoing, you have your opinion, and the majority has its opinion. Once the deliberations are completed, then in that case, we follow the majority. And a person says, my opinion is no longer an opinion. I suspend my opinion for the opinion of the majority. Va'afu maskim sheyeslinei k'maisa das harayv. The minority then agrees that this is the halacha. And I'll give you a very practical example. What happens when there's a question of what should the halacha be? We have Beis Shammai saying one way, Beis Hillel saying the other way. So what did Beis Shammai do after the halacha is ruled like Beis Hillel?
That's it. They accepted it.
They did like Beis Hillel. So how did Beis Shammai light the menorah? On the first night of Hanukkah, Beis Shammai lit one flame. Yeah, but Beis Shammai held you're supposed to light 8 flames at the first day of Hanukkah. That was until there was a verdict reached. Once there was a majority that ruled a certain way, Beis Shammai has to follow the halacha too. It says, this requires elucidation. Isn't it clear that psikas halacha tzricha liyis al pi achros haseichel? Isn't it clear that the halacha has to follow the logical conclusion that's drawn? That means the Torah is not in heaven, the Torah is on earth. The court has to decide. And in this case, the majority rules, so minority will suspend its opinion. But that's mebechina maisis. That's on a technical level. So Beis Shammai will still say, I think you should light 8 candles on the first night of Hanukkah. But I have no choice. The courts have ruled. I have to follow what the court says. Acharam lahatis. Aval mebechinas havanasi asichlis. But from their understanding of things, he still feels his opinion is the right opinion. He still feels they're making a mistake. So Katan say the court has spoken when a minority of the court, not half the court, but 40% of the court disagrees. The court hasn't spoken, the majority has spoken, the minority will accept the opinion, but the court hasn't spoken. You can't say spoken in unanimity. There's not a unanimous opinion. There's a dissenting opinion. And dissenting opinion remains a dissenting opinion. So how can we say the halacha is ruled by virtue of the courts in unanimity when you don't have that common opinion? You don't have everybody agreeing what the halacha actually should be. In other words, you'll have the minority agreeing that technically we lost. We have to follow the halacha because that's what the majority said, but we don't agree that. It's not our opinion. You understand the issue here? The issue here is that in halacha, we say the court has spoken, but practically, the court is not actually being represented. The majority of the court's being represented follow a certain approach, but it's not the opinion of the majority.
What choice do you have? I can understand it has to be ultimately one decision that comes from
yes, there has to be what so. There has to be one decision, and we have to follow the majority. But the Rebbe is asking, ultimately, there's a minority opinion. agree this is the halacha.
And if you don't, if they withdraw totally, then you just have a majority.
If they would withdraw, so they say, okay, our opinion doesn't count. But in halacha, the court can't withdraw. If a judge says, I don't know what's right anymore, I'm not sure, he's actually removed from the court for this judgment. Then he doesn't have an opinion.
And what would happen if it's deadlocked?
This is a discussion. What do you do when it's deadlocked? You have to add more justices. And you go all the way up to 71. You could go from 23 all the way up to 71.
Okay.
So the Rebbe suggests the following idea. This is the resolution. The Rebbe says, Nira lefarash es hadvarim b'yesarim. Here is a sound new perspective. La'achar shebez demachriyas halacha al-pidas ha-raiv. After the deliberation is concluded, and then the majority rules, and that's majority of whatever the majority opinion is going to be, which this is behesem le'iras ha-tayra, this is in keeping with the Torah's instructions. The Torah says, achare rabim lahatais. Majority rules, follow the majority. So yedeya gam hamiyot shekach tzichali kovah b'halacha. The minority now knows that that's what the halacha is supposed to be. And once the minority knows that's what the halacha is supposed to be, me'acha shezeu retzeinu shel abayda, because we believe that this is the will of the Creator, u'me'acha shegam dayane hamiyot hen tamidei chachamim, because the minority is also Torah scholars and sages who follow what Hashem wants, haloyndim Torah b'teiches batlos, who learn Torah with a sense of humility, with a sense of obedience to Hashem, b'fnei ratzon abayda, then they will return to this idea and contemplate again and again and again. In the end, their opinion will turn. Why? Because they know that's what Hashem wants. And because they know that's what Hashem wants, in the end it will make sense to them too that this must be the actual halacha. Because it follows the majority. In other words, if you would be told, the minor judge is told, this is what the senior judge says, what would the minor judge say? I don't even have an opinion. That's what the senior judge says. So the minority gave its opinion. The smaller judges gave. In the end, the senior judge spoke last. So the opinions were taken. You don't change your opinion. The opinions were taken. The tally was taken. And now we have a majority that says A or B, however it's going to be. So the minority now, the majority rules. Majority rules al pi teira, because by virtue of that's what teira has to say. Because majority rules al pi teira, it must be that that's the right thing. So they'll contemplate and rethink until they come to the decision. They'll understand the halacha in the way the majority ruled. So really, in the end, who speaks? The court will speak. And that's how we can understand the notion of majority rules. Majority rules doesn't mean that the minority remains dissenting, but in the end, in a Torah court, in a Torah situation, in the end, since that's what Hashem wants, since that's what the methodology of Torah says, everybody will come to that final conclusion. And now you know a little bit of how the Torah judiciary functions.